This morning, scripture reading will be taken from 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 19. 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 19. Now, Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by company and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." And one went in and told his Lord, saying, "Thus and thus saith the maid that is of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go to go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel." And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man does send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." And it was so, when Elijah, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elijah. And Elijah sent a messenger unto him, saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." But Naaman was wroth, and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Aphra and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servant came near and spake unto him and said, "My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou have not done it? How much rather then, when he said to thee, 'Wash and be clean'?" Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the sayings of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, "Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant." But he said, "As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, then I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon. The Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading of his word.
Good morning. I appreciate those who took up the slack while I was in Washington, D.C. Brother Tooley, it's good to see you again. While I was in Washington, D.C. preaching, and appreciate those who took up the slack and filled in my absence. I came back and went to the pain clinic, and I didn't realize that anesthesiologist worked at the pain clinic. And I said, Doc, we have something in common. We both put people to sleep. And he gave me some medication that kind of scrambles my brain. So my wife could tell the difference in me. I couldn't tell the difference, but she could. So I thought this morning I'd better take something that was not too deep, that I could focus on a little bit better, a well-known story, a story that anybody that preaches the gospel has this in their lessons, has the story of Naaman the leper in their lessons somewhere. Because it's such a type or a shadow of that which is the reality in the New Covenant. And so I want us to, we're going to camp out in 2 Kings chapter 5, and we're going to look, this is a textual lesson, we're going to look at this text, and we're going to look at the story of Naaman. Principal characters. And this is a story that is well known to us all, but you might not have. Let's see, I think there's a light here. I can, is that better? There are five principal characters that I want us to look at. And as we look at the story, this may be a little bit different than the way you typically look at this. You don't consider these five characters. We're going to look at three of them this morning, and then we're going to look at the other two tonight. There is too much material in this lesson to cover in one lesson, in one sitting. And so the five principal characters are the little slave girl that was a Jewish captive taken on a raiding party. It is Elisha, that should be Elisha, not Elijah, but that's Elisha. Naaman's servant, God himself, and then finally Naaman. We'll look at Naaman last. And then, before we get into those five characters, who is Naaman? And what is there that's significant about him? And he was the king, or he was the captain of the host of the king of Assyria. And as we've been studying on Wednesday evenings with the minor prophets, we see the word hosts has an interesting meaning. And it is, when we talk about the Lord of hosts, it is the Lord of all the armies of both heaven and earth. The Lord of all the armies that God captains. And so in this particular reading, Naaman was the captain of the host of the armies of Assyria, or of Syria. And put it in kind of a little more modern terms, he was to Syria what George Washington was to the American colonies. He was to Syria what Dwight David Eisenhower was to the combined Allied forces in World War II. He was to Syria what General Schwarzkopf was in Iraq, commander of all the Allied forces there. He was the General Petraeus of Afghanistan. He was a great man. And we can look at all these men and we can see how that the caliber of this man would be understood. He was, and we esteem these men because of the things that they have done, because of what they have accomplished, and the same thing is true of them. He was a great man because by him the Lord gave deliverance to all the armies of Assyria. Not only the nations around Israel, but Israel itself was taken, at least parts of it were taken, as Syria would war against Israel, and this little Jewish girl was taken in one of these raiding parties. By him, the Lord gave deliverance to the captors around him and the nation of Syria. And it is because of that that the New American Standard calls him an honorable man. I think it's the King James or maybe it's the American Standard that calls him a great man. And he was appended to that, a great man of valor. There could not be more medals. I'm a Marine. And Chesty Puller is the most decorated Marine of all time. And this is the Chesty Puller of Syria. You couldn't put enough medals on his tunic. For the weight of the medals, he would have to be seated. I'm sure that's an exaggeration. But that's how great this man was. The next phrase negates everything great about him. But he was a leper. Think of that for a moment. We don't think too much of that in our day and time and in our culture. We look at that face of the face of a man who had leprosy, and it looks pretty bad. And he's pretty well disfigured. But I wouldn't put all the pictures up here of people who had leprosy because their hands would be nubs. Because leprosy kills the nerves. And you can't tell when you break fingers and break toes and they just kind of rot away as they're broken. And the stench of the dead flesh that would have been on Naaman would have been evident to all that were around him. And so everything that was great, everything that was honorable, everything that was noble about this man is negated by the fact that he is called a leper. Leprosy was not just a disfiguring disease. It was a fatal disease. It was a communicable disease. It was a disease that took one out of the community of men and placed them in leper colonies. It was a disease that would eventually end in their death, and as they rotted away until their death, they would be known as lepers by everyone who came in contact with them. This is not an honorable end
for a warrior.
To have been through all the campaigns and all the battles that he had been through and be unscathed and to come home and get leprosy and die as a leper. Kind of reminds me of Patton. Went through all the battles of World War II and is finally done in by a car crash. And as we look at the five characters in this story, we see the commonality of the five of them. All five of them, including Naaman himself, work together for the healing of Naaman. Some worked on their own, by themselves. But all of them worked for Naaman's cleansing. Without all five of these people being involved as they were, Naaman would not be healed. Naaman would die a leper. Each individual part of this story needed to do their part for Naaman to be healed. Some, as we see in this small or young Jewish girl, played a very insignificant, very small part. But without her part, Naaman dies a leper. Some play a much larger role, a much larger part. But all of them are necessary to the healing of Naaman. And tonight we're going to look at that and make application to the Lord's church. How that is applicable to us today, to this morning. We're going to start off and look at the Jewish servant girl. Verses 2 and 3. The Syrians went to Israel on raids. And in one of these raids, she was taken. And this little servant girl of Israel was a captive. And she was the servant of Naaman's wife. So she would have had some level as a servant would, but she would have some level of prestige in the fact that she was the servant of the wife of a great man. But in this story, she never talks to Naaman. Never. She simply talks to Naaman's wife, and the only thing she says is just one simple sentence. Would that my Lord were the prophet in Samaria. Then he would heal him of his leprosy. That's the only part that she plays in this that is given to us, is that one sentence that she says to Naaman's wife. She knew where to go to get to Naaman. She didn't have to go to Naaman. You talk to Naaman's wife, and he gets back to Naaman. And everybody knows that. If you want to tell something to the preacher, and you don't want to tell the preacher himself, often where do you go? And I'm not saying you should do that. But you go to the preacher's wife, and the preacher finds out about it. And so in this list of contacts that we have in our story, she is what I'm calling the initial contact. The initial contact that Naaman has to have in order for him to be cleansed. She has information that Naaman needs in order for him to be cleansed. You know, she could have made excuses not to speak to Naaman's wife. I'm just a young girl, a captive, a servant. What can I do to have influence over this great man? I'm just a woman. And I'm just a young woman. And I'm just a slave. I'm just a servant. I'm just a captive. But she had the courage to speak. And her role, as small as it was, played a significant, integral part in the healing of Naaman. The effect of the small role that she played was huge in the overall scheme of this story. We cannot minimize the fact that she just made a one-sentence statement and then say, well, she didn't really do much. She was the initial contact that brought the information that Naaman needed. And you know, in the Lord's church, we need those people that can make the initial contact in spreading the gospel. You ever thought about that? Just one sentence that you might say to somebody in this initial contact could make the difference between the salvation of a soul and that soul being lost. And some of us might say, well, what can I do? I don't have any talents. I'm just a young kid, or I'm just a boy, or I'm just a girl, or I'm just a woman. What can a woman do? You see in the story what a woman can do. We need people who can make the initial contact. And that is a gift that some have that others, quite frankly, don't have. There are some people that can just open up, that don't know strangers, that can just open up to anybody and start talking to anybody and can introduce the gospel in just a phrase. They might feel like they have no talent, like they have this inability to teach the gospel to the lost, but they have this ability to make that initial contact. And they're good at it. And think about how little she said in this overall story of Naaman. I mean, it's... And she said to her mistress, I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Syria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy. That's it. That's all she said. But what came from this initial contact? In verses 5 through 7, the king of Syria began to write an international correspondence between the nations of Syria and Israel. And in this, because of this initial contact, the king of Syria sends to the king of Israel 10 talents of silver. Remember what we said a talent of silver was? 66 pounds of silver is a talent. 660 pounds of silver went, whatever the cost of silver is. You could calculate, look up the cost of silver with the one-eyed oracle and calculate that times 10, and you've got the cost. Not only was silver sent, gold, raiments, and changes of clothes were valuable in this day and time. You couldn't just go to the store with any ease buy a piece of cloth. It was expensive because making a cloth was a time-consuming thing. And so all of these things were sent to an enemy of Naaman's. And that enemy's prophet had the ability given to him by God to heal this great general. But it's all taking place because of this little girl's statement to Naaman's wife. The initial contact is made. And all of this takes place as a result of her work and her effort. Compare the faith of this little servant girl to kings. Now I'm talking about the king of Israel. Remember what happened when that letter, that international correspondence came to the king? What did he do? He ripped his garments as a sign of grief and frustration. And this little servant girl, who had simply spoken to Naaman's wife, and her desire was that her master see the prophet in Israel, and he would recover him. He would heal him. See how strong her faith is in the Lord here? And then the king of Israel, as this proclamation is given to him, he receives the letter, he rends his clothes, and he says, am I God that I can have the power of healing people? Can I kill and make alive, or can I recover someone from this deadly disease that has no cure at this time? I know what the king of Syria wants. He is just looking for a way to cause a problem between us so that he can come and take over. Why didn't the king of Israel speak up and say, you know, we have a problem in Israel? And this little servant girl, I'm sure that that correspondence included the servant girl's. I can't imagine the correspondence not coming to the king of Israel saying, we have captured a little servant girl who told us about a prophet in Israel who is able to do this. Now, here is a gift that I'm giving you, all these gifts that I'm giving you. Please provide this introduction to the prophet for my greatest general, General Naaman. He didn't even think of Elisha. Never crossed his mind. Is that the way it is with some of us? When we are confronted by a problem that seems so insurmountable to us that we just can't figure a way out of it, do we ever think of God? Do we ever think of going to Him in prayer and saying, Lord, I need Your help? This never crossed the king of Israel's mind. I think the king of Israel this time is Jehu. If I'm not mistaken. But see the contrast between the simple faith of this little servant girl who provided the initial contact and the king who had the power to grant the request of a foreign dignitary. King of Israel had the power. Little servant girl had no power. She had no position. Certainly not the position of a king. She had no status. He had all of it. And yet her faith stands as a testament to her, much greater than the faith of the king. Second character in this story is Elisha, the prophet of God. And we might look at him as having a great role in verses 8 through 10. But Elisha didn't feed Naaman's pride. What was Naaman's complaint when Elisha simply provided a servant of his to go out and greet Naaman? This is a great general. What would you think of somebody in our day of time, who, if General Petraeus had come to see you and you would send out know, maybe many of us who have servants, but you sent out your son, maybe, or the next door neighbor to greet him. What? How do you think General Petraeus would feel about that? Or General Norman, Stormin' Norman Schwarzkopf would feel about that? But Elisha reproved the king's lack of action. How come you didn't come to see me? Why did you tear your clothes? Why didn't you come and see me? But you know, Elisha had just never thought about it. And so Elisha, as he greets Naaman, doesn't even go to him. And Naaman, notice in the story, Naaman comes not just by himself in his chariot. You kind of get the impression that he comes by himself. He doesn't come by himself. And later on in the story, you can see him and his entourage is talked about, is discussed. And so he would have come with all the pomp and ceremony of a great dignitary. And Elisha didn't even go out to see the pomp. He didn't go out to participate in the ceremony. Surely I thought the prophet would come out and wave his hands in the air and stand before me and appeal to his God, kind of wave his hands over the spot and cleanse me. He didn't even do that. Now, you've got a foreign dignitary that comes to your house. An envoy of a foreign power who brings all kinds of gifts, silver, gold, changes of clothes. And Elisha sends his servant to go tell him what he needs to do. And what he tells him to do makes absolutely no sense to him. I have a deadly disease, an incurable disease, and you want me to go and wash 7 times in the muddy Jordan River? Why can't I go back home? And surely the rivers of the Abana and the Farfar are much cleaner and better than any of the rivers in Israel. Why? You know, we went to Africa. And I can understand Tucker's saying a little bit of what he's saying. I didn't want to get in any of the waters there in Africa. I was, you know, you do that and it's, you're going to spend a long time in the hospital. And so why can't I just go back home to my own? And I'm not afraid of getting in the rivers here. Why can't I just go back home and get my own waters? I mean, it doesn't make sense anyway, but if I'm going to get in the water, why don't I do it back home where I'm comfortable? There's nothing about the gospel that appeals to people's pride. Elisha didn't appeal to the pride of Naaman. There's nothing about the gospel that appeals to the pride of men today. Notice, not many mighty are called, not many noble. Who are called? You and me, the simple people. Yeah, I'm calling you simple, I'm calling me simple too. The simple people. That's who the gospel appeals to. As we were talking about this class this morning, people were giving up. I mean, it's not that you get something. People don't come to the Lord's church to get something. They give something like they did in Acts chapter 5. They didn't claim that anything they had was their own. But there was a need there that they needed to supply, and they supplied it. All for the greater glory of God. There's nothing about the gospel that appeals to the pride of men. The gospel brings people to their knees. Sinners don't come to the church to do the church a favor. The gospel doesn't appeal to anything that would make pride swell up in the person. Look at the story of the prodigal son, Luke chapter 15. Prodigal son was kind of feeling his oats, and he went to a far country and lived a riotous life. Why did he not live a riotous life at home? Why did he go to a far country to do that? People in the military have typically, or when they come into the military very young, never been away from home, very little at any rate. And what happens when they go out on their own? They live a riotous life, for the most part. Now there's a few, and we have some military people here. Everybody here that I can think of is or was in the military, including me. But he went to a far country and lived a riotous life where nobody could see, where nobody would know. And as a result of that, he spent everything that his father had given. And now he's left in a far country. He doesn't know anybody. He doesn't have any talents. He doesn't have any ability. And he finds himself feeding off of the carob pods that the swine would feed off of. And I can see him, that a swine was to the Jew, was a very unclean animal. They had no contact with swine, but yet he's living with the swine now and eating the things that the swine eat. And so he comes to himself. He comes to his senses and says, the hired servants in my father's house are better than I am. And so he goes back to his father's house, not as a son, but as a hired servant. But he comes back with a servant's heart. And he says, Father, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. He was a different man than when he left. Prideful, arrogant. I want mine, I want what's mine, and I want to do it my way and go out on my own. And he goes and he falls flat on his face. And he comes to himself and comes back in humble submission to his father. I'm no longer worthy. And where's the father? You're right. You had it coming. You shouldn't have gone off on your own. I told you this would happen before you left, but you didn't listen to me. That's the new American Standard Translation. His father saw the humble spirit of his son. And he put the ring on his finger and said, kill the fatted calf. Put a robe on him. My son was dead, and now he's alive. That's the spirit that is here in this story as well. Elisha doesn't call attention to himself. He doesn't want Naaman's glory. He doesn't want Naaman's gifts. He doesn't want to have himself as the focal point. In this cleansing of Naaman, he plays an integral part, but he wants God to get all the glory. And Elisha doesn't even come out to him and say anything to him personally. Simply sends his servant out. We need people to point people to Jesus, just as Elisha pointed his servant to Naaman. We need those kind of people if the gospel is to be spread in our community. We need people who make the initial contact. And then once the initial contact is made, we may not be the person that can go out and teach them, but we can point somebody to a person who can. We need people to point to those people who can teach somebody. And when we do, that becomes an integral part of the story as well. We have done what we could have done. It may not be in our eyes anything that's significant, but look what happens as a result of this servant telling Elisha, or telling Naaman, the message of Elisha, what he has for him. Pointed him the way to his cleansing. We need to be able to have the ability to hide ourselves behind the gospel and not put ourselves in the forefront. Not say as a result of anything I did, but as a result of what God has done through me. Our oratory skills are probably not going to impress people in this world. But I know something that is going to impress them. And that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel must be preeminent in our talk, in our walk, in our teaching. We must, as Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 11, if any man speak, what is he to speak? And why is he speaking? Let him speak as the oracles of God. You know, as we look at the New Testament, Paul didn't call attention to himself. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Paul says, "And I, brethren, when I came to you, came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, proclaiming to you the testimony of God. For I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and much trembling." See how effectively he hides himself behind the message of the story. "And my speech and my preaching were not in persuasive words of men's wisdom, but in the demonstration of the power of the Spirit and the power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God." If you present yourself and hold yourself as that which brought somebody to Christ, their faith is not going to be resting in the gospel. Their faith is going to be resting in that person. And what's going to happen when that person disappoints you? As is inevitably going to happen. If your faith is in the preacher or your faith is in some man, then when that man falls away, when that man sheds the glory that you have put upon him, when by doing something foolish and stupid and simple, your faith in him is shattered. And your faith is shattered because it's in him, not in the gospel. I went in Washington, D.C. and preached in the Baptist church before. I think it was before Reed and I ever got married. Yeah, it was before Reed and I ever got married, I believe. I had made a contact with somebody as I was repairing machines with Wang Laboratories, and her daddy was the founding pastor of this church. And I don't know if her dad was out of town, And I don't know if she asked her dad, but she asked me if I would preach while he was out, because we'd been talking about the Bible. As I would go and fix her machines, we would talk about the Bible. So I went to this Baptist church. And I got there, and I was the only white face. I felt like a marshmallow in a box of raisins. I felt out of place. But I was there to preach the gospel. And I preached on the errors of denominationalism, that we should not call ourselves by men's names. And I mentioned the Baptist church by name. And you could have heard a pin drop. But I was scared to death to go there, because of what I knew I would have to do when I got there. The power is not in ourselves. It's not in our ability to speak. The power is in the gospel, and if I had more faith in the gospel, I would not have been afraid to go there. My faith would have been resting in the gospel, because that is God's power and salvation. That's what I should have been focused on. Not the fact that I was in a place where I didn't think they were going to receive my instruction very well because of what I was going to say. And in this story, Elisha the prophet told Naaman what he needed to hear, not what he wanted to hear. Did Naaman want to hear? Yeah, let me go to the Jordan River. It sounds like a good idea to me. And heal me of my leprosy. Yeah, I think that's a medically sound thing to do. He told him what he needed to hear, not what he wanted to hear. Naaman wanted Elisha to come out and wave his hands all over the place and say, "By the power of the God of Israel, be healed!" And he was healed, and slap him on the forehead and make the guy fall back and faint, you know, kind of like you see on TV today. And oh yeah, man, that was a great experience. I could just feel when he hit me in the forehead, the power just come all over me. That's what Naaman wanted. That's not what Elisha gave. He simply told him what God's plan for cleansing was. That's it. And you go to the Jordan River and you dip 7 times. Naaman, after protestation, you know, we're going to get to that in a minute, but I'm kind of jumping the gun, but his servant comes and said, "You know, think what you're doing." He goes away in a huff, right? Because Naaman doesn't understand what he understands what he's supposed to do, but he can't put it together. Why am I doing that? Why am I going to the Jordan River to... I've got leprosy and I'm going to dip 7 times? Why 7 times? Why not 6? Or why do this at all? And the servant came to him and said, "You know, if he had come out and told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it?" And he said, "Well, sure. Then why not just do this simple thing?" And he encouraged him and he got him to do that. After Naaman went away in a rage, you know, his servant came and he simply told him what God's plan was for him. Dip 7 times. And you know, that's what we need people to do today. We need people to not tickle the ears of the people as they're presenting the gospel. But we need people just to tell the cleansing power of the gospel, the cleansing power of God. What people need and not what they want to hear. What they want to hear is, yeah, all you got to do is believe. You don't really have to do anything. Just believe and you're saved and that's it. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to change your life. You don't have to make any changes. You know, just believe and you're saved. And it'd be a good idea if you want to read and study, but you know, there's no way that you can fall away once you've been saved, so what's the point? That's pretty much what we're told today by most people. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verses 1 through 3, Timothy is instructed by Paul. He says, I charge thee in the sight of God and Jesus Christ, who should judge the quick and the dead, the living and the dead, and by his appearing and by his kingdom, preach the word, be urgent, in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and patience. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but will heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And heaping to themselves teachers of their own lust, and will turn away to fables, turn away their ears from the truth and turn into fables. We need people to be able to make the initial contact. We need people to point the way to somebody who can teach them about Jesus. We need people who can teach them about Jesus, and when they do, teach them simply God's plan. We can be effective in the work of God today if we learn the story of Naaman and all of the characters and the parts they play in Naaman's healing. We must not and we cannot appeal to the pride of people. Oh, we've got this great big building. We've got a preacher who's got a silver tongue. Y'all can say that, but you got a preacher that is, you know, and it's just everything is great, and we've got so many programs and so many things, you'll just be amazed by what you see when you get there. We've got people that are talking just like that. And we can't build up our own name. We can't be concerned about presenting self. What we've got to do is present the teaching that they need to hear and be confident in that teaching and be concerned enough to bring them the message of the Lord and bring them to Christ. And not be concerned with big numbers. People are amazed by what this church does with the small numbers that we have. There are churches that are two and three times this size that are not doing half the things that this church is doing. And we need to do more. And what we need to do is tell people what they need to hear and not what they want to hear. We're kind of out of time, so I'm not going to get to the third part. I've already spilled the beans a little bit and told part of the servants part of this. But what he told, I'll just go into it very briefly, what he told Naaman is, he didn't appeal to Naaman's pride either. Naaman already had his mind made up. He was not going to do what the prophet of God said, and the servant just pointed to Naaman and said, if the Lord told you to do some great thing that you've done, or the prophet who told you to do some great thing, then why not do this little thing? All the Lord wants you to do this morning is to read and hear and receive the gospel in some fashion into your mind. And having received the gospel into your mind, he wants you to accept that the choice is yours. We were talking about that this morning. Free choice. Once you hear the gospel, you've got the freedom of choice to accept it or reject it. That choice is yours and mine alone. Nobody can make that decision for us. We're not going to make it to heaven on the coattails of mom and dad or some influential brethren or some influential preacher and teacher that has taught us. We're going to make it to heaven based upon our own faith. We hear the gospel. We believe it. We let it change our lives. And that's what repentance is all about. And we confess Christ before man. And then we are buried. We don't have to wash seven times in the Jordan. We're buried with Christ. Right here in these clean waters of the Fayetteville. Right out of the tap. All you've got to do is submit yourself. Submit your mind. Have the servant's heart. And humble yourself in order to become a child of God. We're going to make a little bit more application to that principle tonight. So I encourage you to come back tonight. But if you have a desire and a need to be buried with Christ this morning and have the blood of Jesus cleanse you of all sins, you can have that cleansing this morning. And the song of invitation has been designed to encourage us to look at our lives. And 3:17, is that it? All things are ready. Everything is ready. The only thing that is not prepared, if you don't come, the only thing that is not prepared is your heart. Everything else is ready. Please prepare your heart, your mind, and sing the invitation song and come as we stand and sing. Please come.